Hello, friends. Welcome to the show. I'm Tom Broback, and my guest today is Les Spellman. Les is a speed coach out in California who works with the top athletes in the game, specifically NFL players and rugby athletes. Les impacts athletes of all ages through his coaching, social media presence, and his new online course, Speed Pillars. Les has one of the most amazing stories of overcoming adversity, and he continues to inspire me to be a better coach and therapist today. Thank you, Les, for hopping on the show, and I hope all of you enjoy his story. You have quite the history, both in your professional life and personal life, of overcoming adversity. Can you take me through some of those times where you had challenges and how you overcame them?
Yeah, for sure. So, it's funny. It's like looking back at life, sometimes you feel disconnected to the difficult parts or like some of the traumas you experienced. And sometimes you don't really realize how they affect you in the day to day or make you who you are. So it's always interesting. Like I'm always reflecting back on some of those things. I was telling you before we hit audio that that I drive an hour and a half every day. So it's like, I've had a lot more reflection time, since COVID happened. And just looking back, like I had a pretty crazy experience growing up, where I had like two very different childhoods. The first part of my childhood was relatively like uneventful. Like I did not stick out from the crowd at all. Not a very good athlete. Grew up in an area that was like very rural. Didn't experience like much of anything, until I was like 14. And then my mom got divorced and I moved to DC. And when I moved to DC, it was like a completely different experience. Number one, it was like an urban area. It was 85% black when I moved there. You know, I was used to like a mixed, but I was used to being the minority. So like, that was kind of like the first adversity that hit me. And, it was different. It was huge. And then from that, I think because of my two very different experiences growing up, my reactions to things like weren't necessarily how like I would have reacted now, and ended up like kind of being rebellious as a kid, not really into sports, not really into much at all, and I was focused more on just like living my life. I honestly thought I was just gonna try to live on my own and, you know, be grown and not think about college and all that. So what happened was, during that period where I went aside, I got in a really bad car accident, and I was hanging out with some people, it was super late at night, we're driving fast, our car swerved and I broke my femur. And when I broke my femur, I nearly lost my leg, nearly lost my life, because the way that the car hit, we hit an on-ramp, essentially. The way that it hit, it pretty much split the car in half down the backside, and it took my leg and broke my leg all the way through. And basically hanging on by a couple muscles and tissue. And doctors came to me and were like, yo, you're not going to be able to walk. You know, you're not going to be able to run. You know, your walking is going to be painful, essentially, the rest of your life. And it's going to be very difficult for you. So that was like the most defining moment of my life, because judging on what I just said, from my, you know, childhood, uneventful to very eventful, and then experiencing this hardship, it made me realize just how lucky I was to be alive and to have people that cared about me and wanted to see me succeed. So what I did was I took my rebellious nature and decided like, yo, I'm going to actually learn how to walk. I'm going to learn how to run. I'm going to learn how to do this. And at first it was just me being pissed off and young and trying to prove everyone wrong. But in the process, I was developing skills like perseverance, developing skills like faith, developing skills like gratitude. Like, I mean, that was the biggest one, is like being grateful for just waking up in the morning and being able to go to the bathroom, because for 3 months I had to piss in a pan, you know what I mean? So like, yeah. I learned how to be grateful as a result of that. And that's just kind of been the power for my life, is gratitude and faith and just dedication to figure it out. So
before your accident, did you have those tools in your toolbox?
I feel like I did, but not really. Like, you have faith for different things. Like, I had faith that I was going to like get food every day, and I was grateful that I, you know, went to a good school and had good friends. But it, you know, you develop a different level of gratitude and faith when you go through something. And, you know, that was one thing I went through, and I went through a ton of other things like homelessness and, you know, losing best friends to suicide, things like that. But learning how at that point when I was 17 years old, it was actually 14 years ago on Wednesday, learning that skill at 17 years old carried with me the rest of my life, powered my entire life. Like, it's everything that I'm doing, everything I've been doing. It's really, it powered and it inspired me for sure.
How often do you think about the accident? And are you somebody who thinks everything happens for a reason?
I think about the accident every couple of days. Like, I still feel pain here and there, not a ton, but enough that'll hold me back a little bit. It's more of an unconscious thing. You know, every time I get in a car, obviously I think about it. But yeah, I think everything does happen for a reason, and not, like, I definitely believe in God, and I believe that people are, you know, put through things as, you know, to develop certain character things. But I don't believe, like, everything is a test. Like, I think there's consequences for your actions. So, like, what happened to me was a consequence of the way that I was living my life, and I was living fast, and I was doing things I shouldn't have been doing, and that was a consequence. So for every action, I think there's an equal and opposite reaction, right? But I definitely think, like, what happened to me, I had two choices. I could accept the fate that I thought doctors were giving me. I could accept where I was at, or I could decide from that point forward that I was going to go a different route and go the exact opposite route. Like, I knew I'd never be the same. And that's why I chose. So I think for every action you're doing carries a consequence related to it. And if you're doing an action, you have to be ready for the consequence. And when the consequence comes, you still have a decision to make. You can keep on that path and have more consequences for that action, or you could get better at it. And I've always chose the opposite. It's like, get better at it as I go. So that's kind of how I've learned and built, for sure.
At what age did you start appreciating all of the adversity that you overcame, both with the move, with the accident, with those kind of tumultuous years in high school? Was it in college? Was it post-college? Was it recently?
Yeah, I think it was, like, right after the accident, because I shouldn't have been alive. Like, I really shouldn't have. Like, it's a miracle. And I'm super thankful I even have both legs, you know? So, like, right away, it was a shift, like, big shift for me. And it's just carried with me ever since. Yeah.
That is incredible, because I would think most people, especially in those teenage years, it would take 3 years, 5 years, 10 years to fully understand, like, hey, this happened for a reason and I can get better from it, or I can get worse from it. But it seemed like you responded really quickly to a traumatic event and to something that was life altering.
Yeah, no. And it's like, what happened after that was really important, because I went from not walking to running track Division I within 18 months. And I never ran track in high school. I was not, like, super fast or anything. And then now all of a sudden I'm running at the highest level in college. And for me, like, sprinting and what I do now as a coach was really derived from that 18-month period and the lessons that I learned immediately following the accident. Because from that point forward, it was literally just repeat the same process of overcoming what I went through in different forms. So, like, for example, I just taught myself how to code Python and R a little bit. Like, I'm not great at it, but it was a difficult process. But it's the same process of me learning how to walk. Like, there's a difficult part. You fail at it. You struggle. You lose faith. You get frustrated. You scream. You cry. Whatever. And it's just little formats of that throughout your entire life that you're experiencing. Every time you're taking on a new task and learning something or a new project, it's always the same feeling. It just may not be at the peak level of that feeling. It's just, you know, a simple format of what you went through.
Are you able to explain that thought process to the athletes that you work with when they confront a problem in their own life?
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, I'm 31, almost 32. Wow. I'm getting old.
You are getting old.
Yeah. How old are you?
I'm 29. So you're on the other side of 30. So you're way old.
Yeah. You'll be there. You'll be there soon. But yeah, like, when I first started coaching, I was the same age as some of the athletes I was coaching, which was funny. Like, first year I did NFL combine training, I was 23. The oldest guy in my group was 24. you know, so it's like, I'm at the same level, so we're going through it together.
Right.
And I'm learning. So, you know, I didn't really know how to message everything to them at the time. So I, over the years, as I created a bigger gap between the athletes, you know, that I was working with and where I'm at in life, had a little bit more life experience. I was able to communicate what I went through, you know, in an easy way for them to understand and how it related to their life. And, you know, with athletes, a lot of the issues are being given a couple million dollars when you're 21, 22 years old. You know, that is a stress. That is a struggle. And I never would have thought that, you know, looking back. But now I understand that it's such a drastic life change and it's a stress. But then also, like, getting cut or also getting injured. Like, football has 100% injury rate. So if you're working with football players, it's not like if they're going to be injured, it's when they're going to be injured. How do you manage it? The scariest thing I see now is like kids that have success all the way through get to the point where they're super successful in the NFL, never had an injury, never dealt with anything. Then boom, it happens at 25 years old. And that's where you see sometimes where people crumble or you see things happen in the media. By the time it gets to the media, it's typically happened a couple hundred thousand times, like behind the scenes, you know? So a lot of times what we're trying to do is get ahead of those things and manage from a personal life standpoint, like how do we develop certain skills that are going to allow them to be successful in their sport? Because being talented is one thing. And I think there's a lot of talent. There's a lot of fast, strong guys that can throw, guys that can catch, but character is what kind of keeps you in that position. And, you know, talent definitely gets you in the door, but I talk with teams now on a regular basis and some teams will, you know, get rid of a player based on character more so than you know, just ability. Like teams don't want to or have to deal with players that have bad character. And it makes their organization look bad. It devalues their organization. It devalues what they're doing. And I just see now because of social media, there's a bigger impact of what each player brings to the table in terms of character. So having the character and developing the character is part of our group. And, you know, we're accepting of everybody, but also we look for a certain type of athlete in our environment that values those types of characters and wants to grow and wants to get better as an athlete in person.
When an athlete first comes and works with you, how much do they know about you and what you're about and your system? And does that kind of help or hinder things?
Yeah, I mean, now they know, like, they know my story. Like, I put it out enough, and players will kind of update them. And, you know, they kind of go through, like, oh, this dude was homeless, and now he's got this business. But, or he went through this thing. He's got a metal leg. Because my streamer's all titanium. So they think I have, like, a prosthetic leg, but it's just a metal pole. Like, it's not prosthetic at all.
Right.
But, yeah, so, like, they – typically by the time they come to us, they know. Now on the youth level, like I meet kids for the first time and I'm like, hey, I'm Wes, here's my story, boom, let's work. But on the pro side, it's typically they're typically being referred to, or, you know, I'm never like meeting somebody for the first time and they have no idea and I have no idea, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You're somebody who uses your platform for more than just speed and acceleration. You talk about issues of all kinds, whether it's race, social. Do you think other coaches should do more of that? And what has your experience with that been like?
Yeah, I think I'm in a unique position because I don't work for a team. I'm not going to work for a team anytime soon or anything like that. And like, I don't have to answer to anyone or when it comes to that. So I'm able to like speak about those things. I know there's some coaches that they definitely support it, but, or support like what's happening on a social front, but they can't always speak about it just cause their team or something like that. But I definitely think coaches should, and I think everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but I think feeling strongly about something is important. And I think people think coaches are robots and don't have feelings, don't have empathy, don't have, you know, they're shocked when I'm like saying stuff and I'm like, well, like I'm a person too. Like, you know, I went to college, I studied, I learned about a bunch of different things. Like I read the news as much as I read research, you know? Mm-hmm. So definitely think it is important because coaches are multipliers, and coaches will impact more people in their life than some of these pro athletes, you know, because coaches are spending days with athletes. Like, I spend more time with some athletes than I do my daughter, you know?
Right.
And when you think about it that way, it's like you have a huge impact on them. So if you're allowing like racist, homophobic, misogynistic behavior in your environment, and they're going out in the world and they're doing that, like, you're responsible for that, you know? So there's times where we do have like uncomfortable conversations with guys to help them understand how some of their behaviors or some of their thought processes could be damaging to other people. But yeah, I don't have fear in terms of backlash or what people say. I get messages from people that don't agree. That's fine. Doesn't make me angry, but I definitely think it's important as a coach to have an opinion on those things. And hopefully the opinion is somewhere around loving all people and viewing everybody the same. And so.
I appreciate those thoughts that you put out, especially on Twitter. I think sometimes it's hard to know what's the right thing to say, what's the best thing to say, what to say or even do. And when I see coaches like you who step outside the box and put out their heart and their feelings and their thoughts and their experiences, it makes it a lot easier to not only to like understand where other people are coming from, but just to understand that other people have different experiences than you. Not everyone's the same. And too often, especially with the news and social media, we see the narrative as only one thing. But when you hear people just expressing how they actually feel or what's on their mind today, and in a positive, constructive, you know, let's move forward type of way, I think it really helps a lot of different coaches who struggle with that.
Yeah, it's tough because you have like Twitter trolls and people that will just say negative things just to say them, which is fine. Like, I got no problem like boxing one of their heads off. So, but on another note, like I don't fear them, and I you know, it's not going to affect me because I don't really care what people think, like positive or negative, as long as I know, like, in my heart, my mission is pure. So if I'm denouncing hate and, you know, or things like that, like, I'm not, there's a bunch of people that may say, oh, you can't say that. I'm like, you know what? Like, I really think it's important for people to have the courage to speak up about certain things. So for sure.
I agree with that. It seems like you've turned more into a mentor lately, even though you are 31, 32. How has that transition been, where now people are coming to you for advice instead of you always being the one looking out for advice?
Oh, yeah. No, that's interesting. Yeah, that's a good question, because when I first started coaching, I was reaching out to coaches and I was like, hey, man, like, I want to connect. And they didn't respond, or they just said, oh, you know, like, if you want to talk to me, it's $30. You know what I mean? I was like, okay,
right.
cool, bro. I got big time by everybody. I applied for jobs. I applied for all the sports performance jobs that are out there. When in 2011, 2012, I applied for, didn't get them, didn't get internships. And I was like, you know what, like, as somebody that's coming up, that's hungry, that's trying to do good in the world, there should be more opportunities to connect with people so that you could be put on the right path. Because, like, let's say I turn up to be a coach, and let's say I was bitter and I was doing everything out of spite, like, I would do more harm in the world than good. So I think it's really important that when you meet people that have impact, and I think every physical therapist, every coach, every person has impact because of the people you interact with, you should do your best to tell them some of the things that you've been through, and maybe that'll help them. And, you know, the learning goes both ways, because I learn a ton from just talking to people and learning about them. But yeah, it's more so like me seeing that there's a gap between, I guess, the market in terms of coaches wanting to sell their product and, you know, coaches that have, you know, and want to get insights into like how to get started and how to build their business and how to communicate and how to grow. Like, not everything needs to be like a firewall, like, you got to pay for this type thing. I think there's a lot of things that are just life advice or just real conversations that you can have with people and connect with them. And if you have a product, cool, like, by all means, make your money. Like, I just sold a product called Speed Pillars. That was great. But I also, on social media, respond to every single person on social. Even if it takes me 6 months, I respond to every single person, you know. And I think it's important to have that human touch. So if I think about my coaching and I think about who I am as a person, I think I try to, number one, I try to give as much as possible, whether that's just listening or whether that's talking or whether that's learning to help grow. I think giving always returns itself tenfold. And when I say, like, I literally am probably, I never thought like this as a business in the beginning. Like I didn't, like, I thought it was a way to help people. And in turn, I felt like it was just returned to me in so many different ways, because the people that I helped ended up becoming top coaches that, you know, I did business with, or the people that I helped knew somebody who knew somebody. You know, my investor is, I trained his son for 7 years. I didn't even know he was interested in investments. I had no idea what investing was. You know, my first employee owns 10% of the company, and, or sorry, my first intern owns 10% of the company and was there when we were sleeping on couches, or sleeping in the car outside of Walmart. My second employee drove out here from New York and slept on my couch for 60 days. My third employee interned for a year. So it's like, you never know, like, the relationships you might encounter just from like a simple Twitter message. Like, it may seem small at that moment, but you know that there's impact behind it because they're connected to exponential amount of people. So that one interaction you have with them could influence all those people around them. And all of a sudden, just from talking to five people, you might have impacted thousands of people. So that's just how I, you know, that's how I think about it. And I think my philosophy came from, you know, just kind of being ignored and realizing, like, damn, this is hard. And I want it to be the opposite. So
I think that message helps a lot of coaches. I think too many coaches right now don't want to start at the bottom, or they don't want the risk of going off and doing it on their own. And you can't really have it. Sometimes you go on your own and you start at the bottom too. And you took those risks, you took those challenges, you took that adversity, you took the time, effort, and energy to do all that. And I think that giving aspect needs to be implored more often, especially when you're first starting off in your career. It's going to be way more give than take, but that is needed to get to the point where you are trying to go. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's always give. And I think the minute that you lose the give part, you're not in the right industry. Like, you're not a coach anymore. You're a tech company, which is fine. You could even give as a tech company, but as a coach, like, you can't lose that personal interaction, that personal touch, that, you know, that human element to what you're doing, no matter how big you get. Because, like, in the end, like, you can grow, you can get to the top of this industry. It's all the same. You're just dealing with people. They're just different people that make different amounts of money. It doesn't matter. They're still humans. You know what I mean? The guy that's coaching in the park with 30 kids, to me, is, I think that's a harder job than the guy that's, you know, maybe working with pros, to be honest, because you're not just like working with the athlete. If they're younger, you're shaping them, you're growing them, you're building them, you're doing all, you're mentoring them. And I guarantee those kids are going to be the future. So yeah, I think like in the industry, you look at it, people are trying to break in and everyone's like, I want to work with pros. I'm like, okay, cool. You can take all my guys, because I'm telling you right now, it's a lot more, time intensive and stress sometimes with those guys. Like, it's hurting cats. You know, the goal shouldn't be to work with pros. The goal shouldn't be become a billionaire. The goal should be is to impact as many people as possible, and everything else is going to fall into line. You'll get money, you'll get pros, you'll get everything else, because a lot of those kids you work with will probably end up being pros if you give, you know what I mean? So I think people approach it backwards and try to go for what looks cool on Instagram and Twitter and all that. But I think what looks cool is humility and empathy and giving. So
I had Mike Boyle on the podcast, and he speaks very highly of you, but he said that anyone can coach a pro, because they can probably do the exercise or whatever you're trying to teach them better than you can. He's like, the real coaches, or not the real, but if you really want to learn how to coach, like, take a group of middle schoolers and try to get them to do, you know, one thing, you know, try to get them to squat or to listen to you or to sprint in a certain way. And yep. I just want to echo that if you really want to make an impact, like, start off with a bunch of elementary school kids, a bunch of middle school kids, a bunch of high school kids, like, make an impact there and see what you can do with it, and see, and you will really learn. Like, is coaching for me? Is working one-on-one or in a group setting? Like, is that for me? Is this something that I wake up to every day that It's like my blood and my soul and what I'm born to do.
Yeah, and you get more reps at it. Like when I first started coaching, first 5 years, I coached kids in the evenings every single day. In the mornings, I worked with Olympic teams. So it was like two very different structures. And in the evenings, working with kids, I learned and I got to practice my communication style. I got to practice my cues. I got to practice how I kept their attention. Because if I can't keep the attention of a 12-year-old, I for sure can't keep the attention of a grown man. They just might view it or show it differently. You know, so with the kids, like being able to set up the sessions, have the energy, have the flow, have the explanation, have the cueing, have the relationship, laugh, joke, like all those skills you're developing for years. Like now you can put that into practice with the pros. So I think that's like the most important part of development is like you should be able to learn that. And when I was talking to Brett Bartholomew, I was explaining that when I owned a gym, my mornings were like middle-aged women. And like, no, some of them had money, some of them didn't, but it was kind of like a mix of middle-aged women.
Right.
They don't like to be communicated the same way that the kids or the pros do. So I had to switch my tone up with them. It was like a little bit softer, but stern, you know? Then by 10 o'clock in the morning, I had 15 pros roll in. Now, whole different tempo, whole different pace, whole different energy, you know? Then by 3 o'clock, I had 8-year-olds. Now I have to switch my energy. So like, you learn throughout the day how to switch your energy, switch your tone. And you only learn that from coaching different types of people. Like you should try to coach everybody. Like if you're getting into coaching to make money, you're not going to have enough time to coach and get better at it because not everyone's going to want to pay you. And when you're first starting out, the best thing you could do is just go coach anything, anybody, your mom, your daddy, whoever, you know, see how they respond to you. And if they don't respond to you, go back to the drawing board. But you don't want to enter into the industry at a high risk situation where you don't have practice, you don't have that those hours and that time built under you. I coached 5 hours, minimum 5 to 6 hours a day for 7.5 years before I even got a number one pick, you know? So it just took time to really to build that up.
And I think the key point there is the doing part. You can read all the books, watch all the videos, listen to all the podcasts. Until you start doing it, you are not going to realize what it takes to be a coach and to have the capacity to change your interactions with people of different ages, different backgrounds, different goals. And I think too often we have all this information on our hands, but there's not enough, I don't know if drive is the right word, to get out there and just start doing and learning on your feet in the gym, at the park, and getting that firsthand experience.
Yeah, 100%.
And I can say that because I've made that mistake. When I first started out, so I kind of like a dual background of physical therapy and strength and conditioning. And I would read all this strength and conditioning stuff online. And I was in my PT clinic and I was like, oh, I can make people faster and stronger, whatever. And then I started getting my hands in it. I'm like, wow, this is like way different. Like kids show up late, kids don't show up. Kids have, you know, 4 sporting events going on in one time a year. It's like, it's way different than just reading on a book or sitting on the Excel sheet and trying and pick it up that way.
Yeah, 100%.
For sprinting, do you think coaches make it too simple or too complex? And if so, what are things you can do to help other coaches who are trying to help athletes sprint faster?
Yeah, I think there's two sides of it. Like definitely some are too simple, but I would argue like there isn't a bad thing about being too simple. I would say there's something bad about being too complex. Like simplicity is like if you're learning how to sprint and the simplest thing you could do is just sprint, you're not doing a disservice to the athlete unless you're outside of the volumes you should be in. So like if I didn't know anything about sprinting, but I knew like volumes and rest periods and things like that, like I'm going to get athletes faster by exposing them to the stimulus. So if I look at, you know, the big rocks of sprinting is there's physical adaptations that need to happen for me to run fast. There's technical adaptations that I'll need. So I need to teach you how to run. And then the third is the stimulus. So if I expose you to a stimulus and it's a consistent stimulus and it's the right dosage, then they're going to get faster. Now, if I want to get a little bit like another layer of granularity, now I add some technical proficiency into that sprinting. And now I have, you know, a pretty decent coach. Then if I have a coach that can also add in the physical development for the skill of sprinting. So for example, developing the power, developing the contact times, developing the stiffness, developing the strength, you know, developing like, you know, anything like that that's going to develop that physical prowess. Now I have an elite level coach. So what I see is I see coaches on level one that might know sprinting from the sense of you go out and sprint to get faster. Mm-hmm. But now they've combined too many different levels of what they think sprinting is. So from there's nothing wrong with ladder drills, in my opinion, but like coaches that think that's going to translate to speed. Now, right. If you go, you want to be simple, keep it simple. If you want to go to the next level, then go to the next level, which is more technical based, which is research and studying. But what I see is that coaches are trying to sell themselves. So they, with their simple level one, they're trying to make it complex to sell, mm-hmm. not so much to make the athlete that much better and all of that. Like, I mean, I know that's their goal, but they're really trying to get more people in the door. So I think that coaches, the best thing you could do is just break it into that. Like if you're starting, be honest with the athlete you're working with and learn about volumes and have them sprint. And then take it to the next level, add a couple drills in that are going to teach technique, and then start to look at the global perspective, like how do I develop the strength and the power to sustain this level of technical and stimulus. So
what is one drill that you like for that technical aspect that most coaches should be using? And what's one drill that you see too often that you think could go by the wayside and doesn't have that translation to better output?
Yeah, I mean, that's all, I get that question a lot. And it's hard to answer because it could be different things for different people. But right. When I do answer it, I typically say switching. So being able to switch the limbs and have coordination enough to move the legs at the same time, like scissoring motion. Mm-hmm. Because that's what that does. Is it creates pre-tension before you actually contact the ground, which is going to allow you to hit the ground with better impulse. So more force into the ground and a faster, shorter amount of time. I would say the skill of switching is probably the most important skill that I'll teach. We'll teach it vertically, we'll teach it horizontally, and then we'll translate it. So having the strength is part of it for switching. Coordination is part of it, and then just practicing it. And then a drill that I see overused, like I don't think downhill running is, I think it's overused. I see a lot of coaches doing that. And mm-hmm. yeah, I think there's some practical applications for very high level athletes that might be able to handle that stimulus and have the technical proficiency to do it. But what I see on social media is a lot of downhill running that maybe is too steep, or athletes just decelerating into the ground and creating a lot of shear force of the shank, you know, the shin, the knee, all that. So I think that could probably go away and I would be happy. Let's see what else. Yeah, there's a notion that like very light sleds is how you develop speed. And I think that's part of it, but it's just like strength training. You can't say like very light weights develop speed. Like, yeah, develop strength. They develop an aspect of strength, develop an aspect of speed, but it may not be the right picture for the right athlete. So determining where on the spectrum they currently are, and then deciding what stimulus is going to help this athlete balance out their curve, and how can I work on the other end of the curve to kind of match up? You know, the goal is power and speed and strength, and everything is power. How much force can I produce at what speeds and those types of things? So I definitely think the industry is moving in the right direction because of people like Altus and Stu McMillan and Jonas that are just giving information out. And it's becoming more of just like a regular conversation. And most coaches can just go online and find a base level of information. But when I was coming up, you had like a couple journals, you had a couple different websites you could go to. And, you know, there's different like groups that kind of got together and decided like, this is how we're going to teach it. And you ended up with all this like bashing and Twitter wars and all these things based around like really basic things that people were calling two different words so that they can market it and make money. So I feel like the industry now is a lot more giving, and there's a lot of information you could just find for free online. So I see less and less of like poor coaching and more good coaches every day. So,
well, that's why we appreciate coaches like you who are in the trenches, you know, every day working with athletes of all ages, of all skill levels. You're making the industry better, not only for you and your athletes, but for all these other coaches who have the thirst and the desire to get better. And they might not be able to come to California. They might not be able to come to the United States, but they can find it online, whether it's on your website, on social media. And I think that is, it's just another big reason why people need to be active on social media or with a podcast or with a blog or speaking at conferences, because I would never know who you are if you didn't, you know, do that course with Paul Fabritz, if you didn't have an Instagram, if you didn't have your podcast. I wouldn't know anything about you. And I think that's such a disservice to speed and power development, because you have so much to give to that field. And I just appreciate you being so active in all those areas.
Thank you. Yeah, it was scary for me at first, because I'm naturally introverted. When I coach, I'm really extroverted, which is interesting, but like off the field, I'm not very social. I'm pretty quiet. So it was difficult for me to like put myself out there and speak and do all those things. But I started to catch momentum, like more so not like on the business side, but momentum in terms of me feeling comfortable with it when I started getting feedback of like, oh, this helped, or hey, thank you. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Like, to me, it seemed like natural and intuitive to share what you're learning. I think that's like, it's as simple as that. Like, you learn something, you share what you learn. And that's all I've been doing, is I learn something, I credit the person I learned it from, and then I share it, and then you grow. And if more people did that, we'd see the industry move at hyperspeed forward. But a lot of times what happens is people learn, they hoard it, and then they try to grow by scarcity mindset, where they just say, okay, come to me, I'm the source. It's like, I think I could be a source, but I also, while I'm telling you something, I'm going to say, go talk to this guy, go talk to this guy. I just listened to like 19 hours of Alex Natera I listened to every podcast I could find on him. I'm like, why did I not listen to you before? And I'm like literally like going crazy, because I'm like, oh man, I just learned a ton. And it's like stuff we obviously have heard before, some of it, but it's a different perspective. So getting, you know, if you hear something from me, like I encourage people to go listen to who I learned it from, and maybe you'll hear a different perspective. So, yeah.
I feel the same way about you, where it's like, where have I been under a rock? Like, this guy has so much information to give. He's got such cool experience. He's overcame so much in his life. And that's kind of the coach and therapist and person I want to be, who gives all the information that they get, who overcomes adversity, who puts in the work, puts in the grind, and ultimately like makes those connection with other athletes, other coaches, and just helps the industry move forward. So
yeah.
Before we go, I did notice that you wear the Vibram Five Finger shoes. I'm a huge minimalist shoe fan, so I just appreciate other coaches out there who have found, and hopefully you like them, but that have found success with minimalist style footwear.
Yeah, they love it. I mean, the guys love it. Every guy that comes in, we have like 37 guys, they all wear Vibrams. Like, for a warm-up, when we encourage them to walk around in them. So like, if you're going to the grocery store, you're just hanging out for the day, just walk in your Five Fingers. Like, when we get to sprinting, we typically will put cleats on or shoes on, but like we know, like, if we can minimize that down to like 45 minutes a day, for like the very, like, you know, like right now we're building up tolerance. So like, we're going to put them in cleats more and do more stuff with them, but we're building the foot strength and keeping them, you know, in the warm-up period, the post-workout period, in the gym, walking around the house, like barefoot or Five Fingers. And, we've seen guys like love it. All the foot Achilles, even hip issues have gone away. It's been good. It's been really good.
I love it. I love it. I use it in my personal life. I tell everyone about it, and I'm just glad other athletes are benefiting from it too. Thank you so much, Les, for taking time to be on the podcast. I appreciate you, and good luck in all your future endeavors.
Yeah, no, thank you, man. I appreciate it.